welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 308 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, Sean Orford and Alison Blackler. How are you doing, Alison?
I'm good, thanks. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. We'll introduce you properly very shortly. We're talking about loyalty today. Alison has got a book coming soon, which we'll have her back on if she enjoys this experience once the book's ready. But it's National Loyalty Day in America, I believe. We haven't spoken about loyalty on this show ever, We'll talk about that. Livingthepresent.co.uk is our website. All the show notes and links are in there as ever. Sean will have written a blog post, won't you, Sean?
He will.
Have you done it already?
No. Okay. But he will by tomorrow.
It'll be online. And do sign up to our mailing list if you want alerts for the show, discount code for the book, and free meditation files as well.
Nice.
Not too shabby. Alison, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Do you want to introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do?
I will. So I am, people call me a mind coach. I think that's become a name that's slightly been made up. It was actually made up by a radio presenter, actually. He called me a transformational mind coach, and I thought, I love that.
Pretty good title.
Yeah,
I like it.
Because I am qualified as a coach, but I also use other techniques. I was originally qualified as a counsellor, CBT therapist, but I don't use that as much.
Yeah.
But I use a lot of clean language coaching and a lot of unusual kind of...
Do you use NLP?
And I use NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. Yeah. So I always say to people, I've almost got this toolkit that I can get out the right tool for the right person or the right occasion.
Yeah, do you still have CBT in your title or ICBT?
Yeah, I still do CBT.
I don't think you mention that much anymore.
CBT is a set of tools I use when they need to be used.
Same.
But when you get people that are locked into being a CBT therapist, they're trying to fit the person to the therapy rather than the therapy to the person.
Yeah.
Which is what I say I've got this now toolkit, which makes it quite unique. Yeah. But I also take that into businesses, into prisons. And obviously I work one-to-one and sometimes in schools. Yeah. So I'm really lucky that I have a real varied day, week.
Mm. What's a typical week look like for you?
Well, it would probably consist of quite a lot of one-to-one sessions with individuals coming who are struggling with life or relationships, anxiety, confidence, sometimes knowing that they're doing good but they want to do better. Mm-hmm. And they want to understand how the mind works. So I do use a lot of the neuroscience for those people, so because I believe it helps them understand, and because we've got the joy of neuroscience out there now, we can use that tangibly.
Yep.
I probably am in businesses one or two days of the week. Some of the time I am at home doing my from home admin things. I am very lucky. I have a young man called Jamie who works with me now, and he does a lot of my marketing. Mm. So he's been with me for about 6 weeks, so cool. I feel very grown up that I've now.
Are you based here on Wirral or in North
West?
I'm
on Wirral, I'm on Wirral, but I do go all over the country. So I've got clients at the moment, or businesses at the moment, in Aberdeen, Newmarket. So I'm kind of in the UK, but up and down, but not all the time. You know, I am generally local.
Well, we can work anywhere now.
We can. Can't we absolutely we? Can, yeah.
And you don't even have to hop on a plane to go to Qatar every now and again. You can do it over... Do you do stuff on Skype or anything like that? Or do you prefer face-to-face?
I think anybody who works like I do prefers face-to-face because we get so much more information from the person.
Yeah.
I can read a lot more of what's not being said, but I think it's I think we have to use it. I have got clients who I do sessions on Skype or FaceTime or whatever is convenient. Yeah. But I usually like to have met them at some point.
Yeah,
I think
it's weird though, because I there are people that I've had coaching relationships with for sort of over 2 years, and I've never met them in the flesh.
Yeah, I think it's doable because you do build a relationship up, isn't it? But I think for me, when I can get in the room with them, I can listen and watch for a lot more.
And you can feel it.
Yeah, definitely. Otherwise, I feel a little bit cut off if I haven't got some of that information.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just part of what I'm trained to watch for and things, but I feel a little bit like, oh, I'm missing something here.
Yeah, well, Sean, you talked about how when you first meet a person, you kind of study things like how they're walking, and like you might follow them down a corridor to the meeting room just to see like a bit of body language stuff.
What the tension is.
Yeah, we all pick up on stuff like that.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a coach or a therapist
to get
to
pick up. People can read body language. Instantly, people can walk in a room and get a sense of something.
Yeah.
But obviously, the more trained you are, the more you'll spot. Which people then means they can't hide. Promise.
It's a bit like when you do a body language course and you're teaching people. People go, "Oh, that's what it is. That's what. Oh, I don't know what that was."
Yeah.
Because then they're starting to put it in some kind of context.
All right, let's move on to the episode, because Alison was very kind to suggest that we talk about loyalty, because she did a bit of Googling what national days.
But yeah, we were looking at what today was, because we were coming together today, and it happened to be National Loyalty Day. I then realised that it was an American day,
and
not so much just a general day for all of us. But I think it's quite an interesting topic.
Definitely.
Because we all believe that we want to be very loyal. But it causes problems. It really does cause problems in relationships.
I think that the loyalty day thing, I have to just say this, is that it's really interesting for me, because May the 1st was always Labour Day, which was a communist socialist thing. And people, by celebrating Labour Day and singing the red flag, which is what they always did, then they were showing their loyalty to the workforce. And what the Americans did was, because they were rejecting communism, Reds Under the Bed, all that kind of stuff, the McCarthy era, they invented their loyalty day on the same day as Labor Day. So people would show their loyalty to the American flag rather than loyalty to the red flag.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it was, and it's those two things about, they called it loyalty day because you had to commit to being an American. But it's interesting, it's exactly the same thing, but from two points of view.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hadn't appreciated that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, loyalty for me. Well, not for me. I've done a lot of bit of research for this episode, but a lot of people might be conjuring up images of being loyal in the sense of a relationship. When we get married or when we're in a relationship, we're expected to be loyal in that sense, are we? So should we start by chatting about how loyalty comes into play? From that kind of perspective, because it's something, well, I'm married, you're married. You married, Alison?
No.
Okay. We're expected to be loyal, aren't we, Sean?
We are.
And you deal with, and maybe you do as well, Alison, people that perhaps are dealing with the consequences of a lack of loyalty in relationships.
Definitely.
So what have you got to say about that?
I think I'd like to start with almost before that, if that's all right.
Yeah.
So there's a dictionary description of loyalty.
Which I'll be putting in the show notes.
Notes, great. But then what people's interpretation of that and your experience of that and your perception of that, I think, is what makes things interesting. And that would be the same for everything. So what one person would say is loyalty, what it looks like, what they would be doing and saying if they were being loyal, is different to the next.
Yeah.
So we've got some parameters for sure around loyalty and thinking about relationships. There are parameters that we believe are going to be the right thing when you're married. This is, you do this, this, and this, or not this, this, and this.
Yeah.
But I think there is still that room for interpretation that, and I see, causes people a lot of problems.
Are you saying that from your point of view, loyalty is in the eye of the beholder?
Yeah, it's sort of. I mean, I think, I think with loyalty, it is one of those values that absolutely does have rules, certainly in terms of relationships, that this society has set. But I think there's still just something around, that how each person says loyalty is to them. What does it look like? And people then will get themselves all upset and, in conflict with one another, because their perception of what has just happened doesn't match with their model of the value. And if we're talking about loyalty today, loyalty. So somebody, even a lighter example, somebody sends somebody, I don't know, some flowers, and the other person doesn't say thank you straight away, and that can be perceived as they're not loyal. But the other person is grateful and is a loyal friend or a loyal person, but there's this relationship thing that goes on that I think does cause people a lot of problems.
Yeah, I mean, you've got this interesting insight at the moment, Sean. You're working in the Middle East, and relationship, a marriage over there in that part of the world is different.
Well, very often it's arranged.
Yeah.
So that you don't have any choice over it, can be. Sometimes there is. It depends on the family. But also, the man can take more than one wife. So it may be that somewhere along the line the guy comes in and says, oh, meet Nelly, she's your sister wife. And the first wife is the head honcho.
Yeah.
The main wife, but then you can have other wives as well.
So the sister wife needs to be loyal to the main head honcho wife.
But when everyone has to be loyal to the family.
Yeah.
That's the loyalty point. And then you have to be faithful to both the country, but also to the religion too. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of loyalties there that you've got to be faithful to.
Yeah, I mean, there's a blog post I'm going to link to, which is snappily titled 17 Reasons Why Loyalty is an Important Quality. It's an all right blog post. I'm not going to go through the 17 reasons because they're all a bit boring, if I'm honest enough. Because it talks
can
about...
Can we not write some really interesting ones?
Yeah, well, that's one thing. It talks about the positives of loyalty, which are obviously things like creating security and connection and loving relationships and respect. What I'm more interested in, getting beyond all that like surface stuff, is the fact maybe being loyal isn't necessarily about showering people with praise all the time.
That's almost what I'm saying, is what loyalty will look like to one, and what for one it might be that you showered with that, but yeah. For another, and if you don't have those conversations within the people that are in the situation, you don't have, people don't know. Mm-hmm. People
so
don't know
if,
that that's
if,
what
if, I, if I'm the king and everybody shows their loyalty by going, oh, King Sean, King, every time I walk down the road, then I know that my subjects are loyal to me.
Because that's been the thing that is expected of you, or of them, sorry, of them.
Yeah.
Because it's been described, it's been said, so I guess what you're saying in those cultures is there are a lot more expectations. It's said that this is what is expected.
Mm.
Which goes with loyalty and things. Whereas I think in here, yes, we've got definitely, there's no doubt about it, there are rules, and I'm doing inverted commas for those that can't see us.
Yeah.
There are definitely rules, there are definitely, around relationships, but there is still something that goes on around what that will then look like. And there's definitely grey area that I think is...
Yeah, so when you're doing couples therapy, do you do couples therapy as well? Okay. How do you kind of broach that subject in terms of, if the partner is concerned about the other person's loyalty, not just in terms of whether they might be playing around, but whether they're kind of supporting them all the time? How do you kind of subtly say that, maybe what they're advising is helpful? They're not just deliberately trying to annoy the other person.
Sometimes you might say it not subtly. You might just say it on your nose.
I think I would. I think I would have them have a conversation around what loyalty was to each one. Because anything will be different from your perception of the world, how you were brought up, what was loyalty like, what did loyalty look like in our families, with our own parents, compared to the next door, where loyalty looks completely different, but it was acceptable. Because you bring that stuff with you, don't you, into your relationships.
But what happens if the agreement in a relationship is that we're going to have an open marriage and we can see other people? So that by maintaining that stance, you're maintaining the loyalty to the relationship. And then what happens if then I start complaining because you're seeing this other person? Am I now being disloyal to our agreement?
Mm.
And that's why it's such a grey area.
Mm.
Of the things that we feel that we should be loyal to. Should we be loyal to our religion? And there's big issues about that at the moment in our society, isn't there?
Yeah.
Different religions, different loyalties.
Yeah.
Should we be loyal to our country? We're seeing a resurgence of the IRA or IRA-type behaviours, whether it is them or not. And would they see what they're doing as loyal? We're being loyal to our green flag and being disloyal to the Union Jack, and what the Union Jack lot thinking.
Yeah, that word traitor is getting thrown about a lot at the moment, isn't it? And betrayal, that kind of thing in national politics. And from my point of view, being loyal to the flag isn't just about endlessly following the story. It's challenging perceptions all the time. That's loyalty to me.
Yeah.
I think something that was really interesting when the Olympics were here, that this country changed...
Mm.
Everything about its loyalty to being British, and it was so super proud, and it was just incredible. And then
It collapsed. Yeah, it's mad how
fast. Have we then stopped being loyal? Because it's an odd thing that goes on. It goes on a lot, and I think it's something that when people are more aware of it, then obviously you can own your own place and not see. I think that whole, what I see a lot of is that just people not really appreciating that somebody else's perception of it might be different.
Mm.
Because we do live as humans quite selfishly, don't we? We believe that everybody's thinking the same as me. So I'm walking around assuming that everybody's thinking the same as me, and they're not.
Yeah.
You know, they're really not. And I think that's where any of these things cause people upset, wastes a lot of time and energy.
See, my thing would be that if you were loyal to me, if you saw me being an arse, you'd say, show me being an arse. And that would be your loyalty, that you'd be honest with me and that you would support me and help me do whatever. Whereas other people might be offended by that.
That's exactly what I think this thing that we need to think about is that. It's because your model of loyalty is, I want, if you are on my side, you'll tell me.
Yeah.
Whereas I absolutely know that there's hundreds of people out there who would not welcome that at all.
And then, you're being disloyal. Yeah.
I think something else that's really interesting, when we earlier on talked about, sort of the male-female sort of perception of loyalty, you know, what we also know is that women, girls, talk a lot to their girlfriends about things.
Yep.
And I've had quite a lot of situations where men will perceive that as being disloyal because they've chatted about their relationship with their girlfriends. Perhaps, and it doesn't go any further with the girlfriends. It is just very safe and there is no judgment or anything. And then the guy finds out that they've had this conversation and they're really offended. But it's just the difference between... Men don't do that. Men talk about whatever you all talk about, but it's certainly not meaningful.
They do talk about women. They say, God, it's a time of the month.
Yeah, and I was out with pals at the weekend in Heswell for a few drinks and a meal, and we're all with our partners or wives as well. And at some point in the night, we kind of separated into the boys and girls, and you could tell the girls were having a great gab about probably us, and we were all gabbing about them. You know, healthy stuff. It was good to kind of let off a bit of steam. So,
it's knowing that there might be a slight difference in the sort of things. I've had people, say to me, "Gosh, especially men, I wouldn't have thought you'd have said discuss that in that much detail." And it's like for girls, it's like, yeah. I mean, some men do. Obviously, yeah. I'm not obviously saying it's an absolute, but I think that can challenge people's loyalty.
Yeah.
If you talk about something outside of the family or the relationship that is deemed as private, that can be seen as disloyal.
Mm.
And actually, often people need to process by talking it through. They need to be able to have that time to go and say, you know what, this is what's happening for me. And it can then cause conflict. Because all they've done is gone and tried to sort out their own head.
Yeah.
And actually then the other person in the family is like, oh, so disloyal.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that, again, it's a really interesting.
Yeah, it's
just to be aware. Again, it's just about being aware of it when it's. So,
in that situation, is loyalty respecting the other person's fears, points of view, anxieties, whatever? So you're being loyal to them by respecting their wishes. So loyalty and respect, are they going together?
I think loyalty, respect, honesty. I think they're probably all in a bit of a merge together in lots of ways.
Yeah.
But I think it's all this idea about being able to be who you are. Because if you are somebody who processes by going and having a chat with your friend to sort out your head, which a lot of people are, and there is a risk that your partner will then see that as disloyal, there's got to be a conversation that goes on to help people understand how you... Otherwise, people are then unhappy because they're not getting what they need.
Yeah.
And it just becomes...
And being loyal to yourself, to your own feelings, your own point of view.
Exactly. Because we're too busy often trying to keep everyone else happy.
Yeah.
And yet, how you do that is virtually impossible because everybody's perception of most things is slightly different. And then, you're not being true to yourself. And interestingly, what I'm talking about in my book is about a lot more about that. Not that that was a link I was looking for, but it absolutely is. You know, it's about being able to be, have the courage to be yourself. If that's what you need, it's how you find it, respectfully, I think you're right, Sean, and let people know that, yeah, actually, do you know what, I do need to go and talk about this, and I know it might be feeling uncomfortable for you, but I'm not being purposefully disloyal. I'm not going out and saying,
Yeah, we're all trying to get better every day, aren't we? Yeah. You know, individuals and as communities as well. I want to move this on to...
I need to object to that statement.
Okay.
You're saying that we're all wanting... No, there are a few people that want to do that, but the majority of people don't.
Well, okay, that's a valid point. Yeah, a lot of people do like are stuck in certain habits and routines, you mean, and they don't like being...
And loyalty to me is you don't push me and make me change, you don't question me.
But people do want to get better, and they do want the world to get better, generally. But maybe they're not.
Some people think they are.
But it's only a small minority that are actually willing to put in the work.
If I belong to ISIS, then my definition of the world getting better, it might be different to yours. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
This is this whole thing. My point for the whole topic is that we don't all see the world as the other one does.
Yeah.
And that can be even people that you know really, really well.
Yeah.
Something can come up and you think, oof.
Yeah.
Mm.
They have seen that so differently. And the thing for me is it's communication, it's...
And we can both go through the same experience and think that we're in the same place, and we're completely apart.
So moving on to, like, the business world and work the workplace.
Mm.
You guys both work in businesses, small and large, and with management teams. So we've had a chat before we came on air, but at what point in a meeting with a new business or a business owner do you let that business owner know that they may be about to hear some inconvenient truths, either from yourself or through staff members? Because
I think for me,
is that like from day one you kind of let them know that?
Yeah, I think if you are working with, if I'm working with anyone, so whether that's the senior leadership team or anyone, obviously part of the contract is that they will be as open as they can be, but they'll also know that by engaging with people like me and Sean, we will spot things that they may not have, they may not know about themselves yet. So I suppose you have that set up, that's what they're signing up for, is they're signing up to be encouraged, challenged and supported to be able to spot the things that they're not seeing. So I suppose if I was working with the senior leader in that way, then I would do that anyway with everyone. I think what's really interesting around when you're going into the corporate world, and the leader, the person that's paying, there is often an expectation that you will then tell them everything that you find within the business. So whether you're doing facilitation with groups or whether you're doing one-to-one coaching sessions with, say managers lower down, which is often what I'm doing. So I'm coaching the leader and then I'm coaching the managers, and there is that conversation about what will and won't be shared.
Yeah, because you must hear some quite interesting stories and things about what the guys lower down, inverted commas, are thinking about.
It's weird when you're in occupational health settings and you're listening to staff members and they're coming and talking to you about their experience in the workplace, you know the managers, because you know the effect of what they have before you ever meet the manager. And when you meet the manager might go, "Oh, hi, how are you?" and seem such a reasonable person, but you know other things. And depending on what that relationship is with the manager, being loyal to that manager, sometimes you have to be honest with that manager and tell them the truth. And sometimes they don't want to hear that. And that's when you and I end up in a tough position, because what do? We know lots of practitioners that would smarmy up to the managers to maintain their job and maintain their fees, as opposed to, "I'm paid to be honest."
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
I think you run the risk of being binned off by a leader if they don't think that they're saying... they're hearing what they want to hear, but I guess they'll stay, you know, for me that would be a conversation of saying, "Well, I guess you'll stay where you are then." You know, and most people who engage with, I suppose, a business like mine are probably in that curious place about how do we get this going. But there'll often be a resistance for a while. But there's definitely something around the loyalty with your whoever I'm coaching, and what that session is about is very much confidential. But obviously I can't be seen to be letting the coachee just moan about a manager or a leader, because that's not, I'm not being loyal to both parties, that's not healthy. But equally, it's how we can support the business to grow, knowing what we know. Because when we know things as coaches and people within businesses, and we're external, people do tell us a lot of the truth.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have got a duty to work out how that is communicated carefully. Mm-hmm. For me, if it's a pattern, if I've seen enough people who've said it, then I feel I can say to each of those individuals, there's a pattern here, and with your permission, I'm going to share it with the manager, but obviously without anybody's names. If it's just one person that's saying they've got an issue with a leader, then clearly it's that person that needs the support to be able to work with that manager, and that would be my attention would then be there.
And one of the things I was saying earlier on is one of my tough things, and I've had it so many times, is I'm asked to go into a department to sort out the team because there's a problem with the team, and then by the time you've done all the assessments and you've met everybody, you realise that the problem isn't the team, it's the manager that asked you to go in there in the first place. And then you have to go back to the manager and say, look, I'm sorry, the team's fine, the problem's you.
Does that go down well generally?
Well, it depends on how you say it, and it depends on who they are. Some managers are shocked, like, oh wow. And then they want to work on it. And other managers are like, how dare you? You know. And for me, that's a point of either engagement or disengagement. There may come a point where I say, okay, that's the reality. You know, you have a choice here. You know, either we can do something about it or not. It's up to you.
Do you have room to go up? Like, is there a manager above that manager that you will then
It would depend on the situation. There are times. I mean, I had a problem with a manager in a big organisation. I'd had over 50 people come to me about this guy. But all of them came to me on the basis of, for God's sake, don't say anything, because they were terrified of their position.
50.
So in the end, I go to the chief exec and I say, look, I've got a real problem here. You know, we need to do something about this guy. He's a really, I said, bad manager. And he said to me, what do you mean he's a bad manager? He's my best manager. And I said, what do you mean is your best manager? And he said, but he always comes in under budget. And that was his definition of good management. The fact that all the staff were dying in the process. Yeah. Was like, you know, and in the end, we did do something about it. But it was like pulling teeth.
So was that, he had a loyalty to the numbers, to the budget, which a business obviously has, you know, economic kind of constraints.
But if you're only looking at the figures, it's great, isn't it?
Well, yeah, how do you change that loyalty then? How do you change a
person's loyalty? Well, you change perception.
Okay.
But you can only change perception by showing something to someone, like it's holding a mirror up, isn't it? Mm. And the thing about when you're in management like that is the psychopathic issue about empathy. And if you say to a manager, do you realise that your staff are terrified of you? And they go, oh my God, no. Okay, you can work with that. But if you say that and they just smile and go, then you know that you're on a lost cause, you know.
Yeah.
So it's interesting stuff. It's good.
Yeah, any funny business tales to tell, Alison? Related to loyalty.
Yeah, I think that for me it has always been the senior team. And often it can be a family-led business, so it's been their baby, it's their thing, and it's grown and grown and grown, and they then think that they have the right to know absolutely everything that's still going on within the business, which is not remotely achievable. But also de-skilling the managers that they've brought in to run our skilling. You're almost taking away their control, and they, you know, you've brought them in to do a job, and actually now you're still poking in all the time, and then someone like me comes in and they're still wanting to know all of the things. So I did have a business where the senior leadership team decided that they didn't want to continue because I wasn't really telling them what they wanted to hear, which amused me slightly. And then they got somebody in who was going to do lots of paperwork and tick boxing exercises.
Yeah.
But I think that I use a model which I'm sure you've heard of called Johari's Window, which, you know, maybe you could put a link to it. It's really fascinating around how people, it's all about self-awareness, and it's all about how you know, when there's something in you, in what this model calls the open. So the open would be things that you know about yourself and things that others know about yourself. So again, we're not talking about secrets, we're talking about behaviours. What would we expect when you know somebody, you would expect them to be the first person that speaks up in a team meeting, or expect them to, whatever it would be. There's also hidden, which is where there's things that you're not telling others. People can tell there's like it's just something they're not quite letting on here. There's not an honesty going on. They're holding back. And then there's a whole area. There's an unknown to self and unknown to others. But there's also this blind spot where others can see things in us that we yet can't see.
So I'm 6'6", bronzed and muscular.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, and I've got legs coming up under my armpits. But it's an interesting model to show people it, because again, it kind of says, look, we've all got bits in all of these corners, and the idea is to have the courage to bring more into the open arena where we know it and so do others.
Yeah.
Because it holds people back and it holds businesses back. But I think the challenge that and the subject we're talking about today is when people know those things, it's the loyalty. Because, you know, with the best will in the world, if you clumsily say, you do that and it's rubbish, there will be, hang on a minute, how dare you, and I'm the boss, and you're not being a loyal employee, so you're on your way out.
Yeah.
You know, it can be as literal as that. Can't it? You know, it really can. So
it's the issue, how do you say something?
Exactly. I mean, that's the skill of helping. And I think for me, in these situations, it is, in the main, it's not me that... My first port of call is not for me to report back to the senior leadership team. It's to skill up the person I'm working with to be able to do that.
Yeah.
To help them build the confidence to go and have those conversations. I use models, feedback models with people to help them be able to go and have that conversation with the manager, which is going to cause less defensiveness. So that actually the traction comes from the relationship between the employee and the leader, rather than someone else coming in and telling you. Because I think that's
more... Did you ever do a mediation?
I have done, yeah. Yep, certainly in grievance situations, I've had that situation quite a few times, and it's been successful because you were able to put people in the same room and have a conversation with you being there as the sort of gatekeeper, etc. But yeah, I think it is, but it comes back down to what other people perceive as the thing. It will be different.
Yeah.
You know, we're all experiencing today together, the three of us, but it's slightly different for all of us because it is.
Wow, it's fascinating, isn't it? I've got this really weird situation in my life at the moment, actually, where a friend that I've known for a while, but loosely is becoming, he's actually in a mental health ward right now. I've noticed his behaviour had been kind of degrading in recent months. He's unemployed. I'm one of his only friends in the country. He's got no family over here. And I'm just questioning now, like, how I best use my loyalty to him. Is it to help him get out as soon as possible, which is what he wants? Or is it to work with the staff and chat with the staff and possibly even solicitors about just making sure that he gets the right treatment, so long term he's healthy? So it's really nuanced thing. And every like text message I'm sending to him, I'm just thinking really hard about what I put in that message and the best way to say it. It's crazy. So wish me luck.
If you were working with one of your children and they were doing something that was going to damage them, then your loyalty to them would be to get it right for them, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And there isn't really any difference. It's the same kind of thing. Maybe a slightly different scale.
It would, but I think for me, the thing that pops up is in those situations, totally different with children, because children are children, and yes, we do a lot more for them and with them. But I think often with people who are in those kind of situations, if you come in like as the rescuer and try and fix it for them, it means they're not taking responsibility for themselves, which actually can exacerbate the problem.
But that also feeds back into the idea that you need to take responsibility for you.
Yeah, exactly.
In this as well.
You've got to be loyal to you.
To yourself.
Yeah.
100% be loyal to you. Loyal to your energy and what you've got to give, because it's not easy having someone in that sort of situation for most people. You know, I think it is probably everyone's dread, is that you're trying to support an individual who is clearly struggling with their own mental health.
But, I mean, at the other end, I see people that have a parent that they've been loyal to, the parent's been loyal to them, and now the parent's demented and they're at home. And how do you maintain loyalty to someone who you don't really know anymore? Maybe they don't even know you, and you're supposed to be there looking after them intimately, maybe?
Yeah.
You know, massive areas. Yeah.
All right, I'm just trying to think how we summarise this one. But so loyalty, you've got blind loyalty written down there, isn't necessarily a healthy thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like the idea that I should be loyal to the flag or to the religion or to the politics, the party, whatever, just blindly and accepting means I'm not usually being loyal to myself.
Yeah.
And I've ceased to take myself into account.
Yeah.
You know. And that's true in relationships too. I do see people that disregard their own need, look after other people ahead.
Yeah, because blind loyalty, we're all changing, aren't we, second by second, as we talk to people, as we learn things, as just as our bodies and minds degrade, as happens, so we need to be open to...
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Prove yourself.
It's happened, yeah. But yeah, maybe does loyalty, like healthy loyalty, mean to be open to change and questioning all the time?
I think so. I think for me it's about helping people, just reminding people that if there is a situation where something has happened, it could just be that there's just a slightly different interpretation of whatever's gone on, as opposed to it being he's done wrong and I've been wronged. Because there's always going to be some, you know, and again, I'm not saying that it's okay to do something disloyal, but it's just checking what that means,
yep,
and what your parameters are. So if anyone, you know, is thinking about a situation for themselves, it's just checking, you know, what could be going on.
Well, the kind of thing that always it kind of amuses me in a negative way, I guess, is that I was reading a thing about the First World War, and there's two armies. We have the German side, we have the Allies on this side, and both of them, before they go into war, have a service where they, you know, God's on our side. So they go through the same process before they go into war, because they both believe that they're right and they're doing the right thing in the eyes of God.
Yeah.
I mean, how weird is that? We can't all be right.
Sure, and those guys in Sri Lanka, last week or whenever it was, they will have all been doing the right thing in their minds, weren't they?
Yeah.
But the thing to pay attention to is what you've just said, in their minds.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it won't be exactly the same, mm-hmm, for everyone. I think that's where there is the rigidity that comes, that causes us all a challenge.
Yeah.
Throughout a day, you know, your interpretation of something can leave you quite flawed as to why somebody's just done that, because that doesn't fit with your model of loyalty or your model.
Yeah, no.
Honesty.
I mean, the guys that went into those church services with rucksacks full of explosives, they probably have friends or family that maybe had noticed a pattern. I'm just thinking about, from my point of view, the chap I know who's struggling with mental health big time right now. I'd noticed his behaviour changing, you know, quite a bit in recent months, but I didn't know him. I felt well enough to challenge him at any point to say, listen, man, you need help, you need to stop talking like this, that kind of thing. And it's so, partly I feel a bit guilty that I didn't have the loyalty to say a month ago, you need to get your together, and look where it's ended up.
I don't know whether loyalty is the right word, but yeah, you know, maybe you didn't have the insight.
I was being loyal to him because I was going along and I was kind of helping him from what he wanted. True loyalty maybe would have been to help
him out. If this could turn into a coaching session, I'd be wanting to understand your guilt.
Yeah.
That's the word that's popped up for me. I'm like, no.
All right, I'll email you and I'll book a session. Yeah, really interesting stuff there.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
We'll wrap it up there. Alison, what's the best way for people to find out more about you before we get you back on the show, hopefully?
Yeah, I'd love to come back. That would be lovely.
To launch your book, but 2-minds.co.uk.
2-minds.co.uk is the website. We've got a Facebook page, 2minds. I'm on Twitter, usual places. Got a telephone as well.
No.
You can actually ring me. Yeah.
Wow, imagine. I didn't know people still use that.
Yeah, it's not all social media.
Fax machine.
No, fax machine. I've got one of them.
And what is the book then?
I'll tell you a little bit about the book. So the book is called A Path Travelled, and it is a kind of, I suppose, this collection of how I've interpreted a lot of the challenges that we all face, it's how, sort of almost how to make sense of yourself, really. So it looks at a little bit of the mind and how it works and why we, how beliefs are formed. So it's not a theory book per se, but it's a little bit of that. Then it's sort of what the influence is in life. So we are all influenced by everything. And just naming that, saying, yep, you will be influenced by parents, by everything. And then how it often plays out. So I've looked at some of the common behaviours, people-pleasing, feeling like you've got to do something that, you know, actually does stop you being. So basically helping people see that it's stopping you being the right version of yourself. So because we do a lot as humans that isn't quite right. And then the second half of the book is a bit more about how to do something about it. So it's very simple.
Okay.
Simple book. So it's everything I've learned. It's a lot of the courses. People used to say to me, I wish you'd write all this stuff down. So I did.
It's been a long time in the making.
A long time in the making. Sean was actually the first person I showed a very, very rough manuscript, probably in about 2011, I think.
11, yeah.
But I'm not a full-time author at all. You know, I obviously run a business. So it is something that I've done over time, but it's got some traction now.
Cool.
Because it really is coming. So it's going to be this year.
Yeah.
It's going to be later
Brilliant.
On this year.
Good.
Well, we'll get you back on
to
talk about it.
Yes, please. That'd be great.
In summer, maybe late summer when you said it
and,
might be.
We'll have to come to your launch.
Come to the launch. That'd be lovely.
Yeah, that'd be cool. All right. Well, big thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Hope you've enjoyed it.
I have.
Okay. We'll see you soon. We haven't really got a resource of the week, have we?
Yeah, yeah.
Alison is our resource.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have Alison as our resource.
I'm your resource, that'll do. I'll
have that. We'll be back next week for more. Live in the present.co.uk for all the show notes and links. And take care, everyone. See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.